This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to another edition of the Basketball Show right here on 92.9thegame.com. My name's Andy Bunker.
And I'm Arthur Trish.
Arthur Trish, the soothsayer. Arthur Trish, the prognosticator. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you.
As I'm sure many of you remember, Arthur predicted that the Warriors not only would win the series, but he also predicted that they would win in five. I don't know if you said that they would lose game four, but you might have back when we started previewing this.
I even was so bold enough to say that I think they could sweep them.
Yes, you did.
And so I bring my behind up to Cleveland thinking that, hey, tonight I'm going to get some champagne. Hey, Zaza, my man, Captain Big Head, pour some on me. And unfortunately, it was sent home to Oakland for a game five.
You know what? Before we get into the series, and we'll get into, you know, we've got four quarters of conversation for you for sure. Have you ever had champagne poured on you before?
Never.
You haven't done that before?
And I was in Chicago's locker room the year they won at the new United Center. It might have been the first year they won at the United Center. And I made sure I stayed far away from it because I had on a really nice suit and I wasn't looking to get that suit damaged. And because it's never happened before to me to be associated with a team, whether it was on a college level or on a pro level, to win a championship and champagne flying and this, that, and the other. I didn't know if you could get that stuff out of your clothes. So I was like, you know what? Nah, I'm not going in there. I'll wait till they're done. And if I have to, whatever responsibilities I had from an NBA standpoint, I'll get involved then. But so this time around, I made sure I just wore some jeans, wore a nice little casual shirt.
Did you have your goggles?
Had a sport coat. Didn't have the goggles. So I would like to think Zaza would have helped out on that, and then I would have walked away with a stained championship hat, but nah, mush.
We did it once on New Year's Eve.
Did you know?
Like, we weren't celebrating a championship. I was just like 23 and with a bunch of my buddies and we're idiots. So we got the cheap cook's champagne.
Oh, did you?
And the dumb thing was we did it in our own apartment, which was a mess, and we had to clean it up. We had obviously had champagne prior to making this decision. It was a terrible idea.
What were you celebrating?
It was just New Year's.
Dumb
23-year-old drunk kids. The champagne in your eyes is one of the most painful things, so I understand why they do the goggles. Yeah, I don't blame them for that.
I don't blame them at all. I mean, we've seen players, no matter the league, sometimes they're looking to just douse somebody straight in their face, and it's like, man, you better learn, wear something to protect yourself.
Did you see Kevin Durant? And we'll spend a good chunk of the podcast today in the second quarter talking about Durant specifically, his performance, and what this means for his career. But did you see him post-game? He was they were celebrating, and he cracked a Bud Light and took a sip of it. And it's pretty obvious that Kevin Durant doesn't drink beer.
Oh, no.
He took a sip of it, and he spit it right back out.
No, I missed that.
Gross.
I did see him on NBA TV after doing the ABC interviews and then the locker room celebration. He came out, and he couldn't stop coughing. And he had to apologize because he said, I had too much champagne. And so I had never seen in all my years of watching post-game celebrations someone having that after effect. So I guess, given the fact this is his first time going through this, he's got to get experience with it.
That's a really good sign for the Warriors management. It's like Kevin Durant has never drank alcohol before. So the first time that he had champagne, he couldn't handle it. So he probably isn't going back to the bottle anytime soon.
And I don't know if you saw this video post-game as well. Once everyone was leaving the arena, he was in his car and fans were outside of Roracle still cheering and celebrating. He happened to get out of his car and brought his MVP trophy out and just stood there and soaked in the adulation from the fans. It was a great scene.
It was a great scene. Very brave.
Yeah, very, like, very much so.
I don't know. My mind always goes in the wrong direction on stuff like that. It's like, oh, be careful, Kevin. Like, don't. You know how people are.
He didn't stay out there too long,
which
though.
Is good. But yeah, you're right. It was Warriors fans. They're in Oakland. Everybody was as excited as they can be. All right. That's what we're going to talk about today on the podcast. It's the all NBA Finals edition until we get to the fourth quarter. In the fourth quarter, we'll get to the Lakers and Celtics 30 for 30, which is coming up tonight. Very excited to watch that.
Yes.
But let's start here in the first quarter with the NBA Finals in general. It was, as you predicted, 5-game series, Warriors, utter dominance. One of the more dominant performances that I can remember in my basketball watching days, although still very highly rated across the country. People were very interested in it. The Warriors seem to be a force to be reckoned with for some time to come at this point.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, one of the things that I was pleased to see was the redemption factor for several individuals. Steph Curry was one. We had really ridden him for the past two finals, even though he was 1-1 in those finals. He really didn't play the way he had played to win two straight MVP awards. And in this particular finals, he showed up to play. He was fully healthy this time around. He was able to do Steph Curry things. He had a couple of instances where he turned the ball over too much. But for the most part, he was way above average in this entire five-game series. And on the Cleveland side, you knew what you would expect out of LeBron James and Kyrie Irving, and those two guys certainly delivered. LeBron finished as the first player ever in NBA Finals history with a triple-double. Kevin Durant was sensational for the Warriors. He certainly was deserving of the MVP award. And I think guys got some great contributions from a lot of different people this time around, whereas maybe down the stretch of when they were up 3-1, people got a little tight last year. They were able to play loose and free, and they knew once they lost that game in Cleveland on Friday night, it was very important for them to win last night because they didn't want to have to go through two more days of rest before they play Thursday night and worry about constant media attention revolving around, is this going to happen again? And for them, they took care of business. It was a wild first quarter. They got things kind of righted in the second quarter and led throughout from that point on. And so it was they have every reason to be proud. They did it in front of their home fans this time around. So Roracle was certainly full tilt throughout the night, and those fans got a chance to celebrate well past the hour of midnight out west.
We'll spend the third quarter talking about LeBron and the Cavs going forward, the second quarter talking about Durant and the Warriors team construction going forward. If not those two guys, because I think the answer to this question is one of those two guys, who else besides those two benefited themselves in terms of the opinion of the basketball community? Maybe and we talk about legacy all the time. I think that's sort of a boring way to put it. But who enhanced the overall opinion of what they are as a professional in these finals if it's not LeBron or Kevin Durant?
Well, I know we're going to talk about Durant next in the second quarter, but I believe it was Kevin Durant because he left a team that was championship quality. And while they had lost some pieces over the last couple of years or so, they had lost to the Warriors the year before in the Western Conference Final. And by making that decision, he had took a lot of brickbats from a lot of fans from across the country. He's still taking it despite the fact they won. But I think you could see the sense of relief in him when the clock struck zero last night. And how he knew that decision. I don't think he wavered on that decision throughout the year, but he knew at the end of that game with the culmination of the NBA championship that he made the right decision. And I think he now can feel much more at ease moving forward with this team. And he's already said he plans on staying there. So whether he gets the maximum amount of money he's looking to get or takes a bit of a pay reduction, I think knowing that he's playing with some of the guys that are best basketball players in the world, it's going to be an easy decision for him to make yet again.
See, I think Steve Kerr. If I'm not picking one of those two guys, okay, I'm going to go with Steve Kerr. And for a guy who's had the greatest start to an NBA coaching career that you could possibly have, 2 championships in 3 years, 73 wins in the year that they didn't win the championship, and battled through all the personal stuff, all the health issues that he's had as well, like, he doesn't get, I don't think, nearly the credit that he should be getting at this point.
That sounds like his old mentor, Phil Jackson.
Yeah.
Because how much credit did he really get with whether it was the Bulls or the Lakers. I mean, I didn't think Phil Jackson received the necessary credit due him until he finally surpassed Red Auerbach. And that was when people finally decided to kind of let their hair down and give this man the credit he deserved, because he had won. It didn't matter the talent that he had on any of those teams. He still was able to win championships with each and every one of them. And so once he hit the double-digit total and surpassed the Auerbach, that's when it seemed like people finally, the light went off with a lot of people, not those of us who were around the game, but a lot of people finally decided to look at Phil in a different light. And I totally agree with you on that point. I wonder if Steve Kerr is going to come back.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Now, I know the GM, Bob Myers, said today they fully expect him to come back. They certainly welcome him to come back. But when you go through the health issues he's had to battle, and thank God it's nothing like severe health issues like cancer or anything like that, but a back injury can be very debilitating. And with traveling as much as they do in the NBA, getting on buses and planes and sleeping in different hotels, and not every bed is the same, that can certainly wear over you over the course of the season. Let's face it, being in the playoffs the last 3 years, they played well over 110 games over the course of those seasons. And so it wouldn't surprise me if he stayed, but it also wouldn't surprise me if he were to walk away.
They're 254-54.
Wow.
Since he became the head coach of the Warriors. They're 200 games over 500 in three seasons. And they should have three championships, too.
Yes, they should.
But they've got two, and that's pretty good as well. Yeah, I'm interested in that same thought, because he was, and obviously you're emotional when you win a championship, especially when you've been sidelined with health issues like he had been. He seemed really emotional last night. Like he was really trying to soak it in. Like he was maybe, like you say, maybe it was one of those things like, man, I don't know if I can do this anymore. I don't know if I can go through that grind day after day after day. Plus, he's just a guy that likes to stay fit. Like you can tell by looking at him, clearly he likes to exercise, still get out on the court and play basketball. And he just can't do that anymore.
Well, and let's face it, he can always go back to TV. It'd be less work, less demanding. He was a great analyst with TNT back when he worked with Marv Albert. And as a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, he was the lead analyst while he was doing that before he joined the Suns.
Yeah, he very quickly became the lead analyst because he was so good at it.
And so with the TNT schedule, or if he chooses to go to ESPN, I'm sure they would be in the market to try to get him as well. You're only working maybe one or two games a week compared to maybe three or four over the course of an NBA week. So it's going to be interesting. I hope he returns, because he's a genuinely nice guy.
He's a good guy.
And you don't want to see an injury take anyone, whether it's player or coach or executive, away from the sport that they love. And so I would love to see him return next season and see how long he can keep this run going with the Warriors.
Well, maybe he's interested in co-hosting an evening show in Atlanta.
We're
still looking for a night show, right?
That's right.
I think at this point.
Well, we got to at least take him on a podcast. He's got to break him in some kind
of way. That's right. Exactly. We'll welcome him into the 92.9 The Game family by having him on the basketball show. That's a great idea. That's a fantastic thought. All right, before we get to the second quarter, just quickly, have the Warriors now entered themselves into the conversation of greatest teams of all time, or are they still a couple years away from really becoming a dynasty and getting into that conversation?
This would be my opinion, and my opinion only. I certainly consider them to be one of the top 10 teams of NBA Finals history. I would have to sit down and really look at it, and I probably will do that over the weekend. But if I had to put them in my top four, I would probably say no. Because they haven't sustained it long enough, based on my years of watching the league and working in the league and loving the sport like I do. It's no knock against them. I've said it many times before, whether it's on our podcast or on Dukes and Bell. I've been on riding the Warriors train since the last 3 years. Once you saw how beautifully they played the game and how they made it fun to watch, and they were all likable guys, and it wasn't like the likable factor was something that drew me to them. Because
it helps.
Yeah, it does. But I didn't have any problems with the Pistons, not the bad boy Pistons, but I certainly respected the bad boy Pistons, but I certainly didn't have a problem with the Pistons years when they had Chauncey Billups, Rasheed Wallace, and cats like that, and they went on their Eastern Conference run before they finally won an NBA championship themselves, because they were hard workers. And they weren't playing the game at a dirty pace. They were very efficient in what they were able to do. And they were coached by Larry Brown, who was one of the best tacticians around. And you were happy to see him finally get that gold as well. So I would love to see the Warriors keep this going. They certainly, as we stand today, before free agency starts in a couple of weeks, before the draft gets underway next week, they are already considered the favorite for next year, as is Cleveland, to get back to the finals. So right now, it looks like we'll do it a fourth time next year.
It's interesting because if they would have won game four, everyone would have said that or a lot of people would have tried to make that argument that they were the greatest team of all time. They lost one game in the playoffs. They went 16-1. Yeah. They blew their way through the entire season. They were as dominant as can be, and really for 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
But then with Durant this year, even taking it that much further. And by the way, they went 67 and whatever this year. They won 67 games. Durant was hurt for 6 weeks.
No doubt.
During the regular season. And they lost 6 games while he was out. I know that that's not very many for most teams, but for the Warriors, 6 losses... that's 2/3 of the amount of losses they had all of last year. They would have won even more games if Durant wouldn't have got hurt.
Well, and I don't know if you and I ever had a chance to talk about this. When they came to town to play the Hawks, that was maybe a week or two after Durant got hurt. And the way they were playing, you just did not think this was a championship team. They had, because now they had to revert back to playing the way they used to without Durant. And I think it took them a couple of weeks or so before they finally found their groove again. And once they did, they went on a terrific run. That loss they had in game four was probably their first in about 29 games or so, if I'm not mistaken. And so I feel bad about doubting them when I did, because I really wanted to see them win the title again. But at that point in time, when they rolled through Atlanta, I was looking at them like, they're not going to get there. And maybe this could be the Clippers year or the Spurs year, or Cleveland can get it done again. But they were able to get Durant back. They were playing at a supreme level before he returned to them, and all they did was pick it up and keep it rolling.
Can you imagine being the college kid that's about to get drafted by these guys?
Oh,
like because obviously they've got late picks. Right. I don't know how many picks they have. I'd imagine 2, and obviously they'll be in the ends of the rounds. If you're the college kid that gets drafted 60th overall, I guess the Hawks have 60th, but 30th overall to the Warriors. That's nice. That's a nice way to start your career.
No doubt about it. And you just be happy that you have to carry the player's bags because you're a rookie and get the newspaper if you have to still do those kind of things. And any rookie hazing that goes on, because once again, you're a member of a world championship team. You won't get a ring on ring night because you haven't played for them yet. But hopefully over that course of the next season, like who was the player who played from UNLV last night for them for the first
McCaw.
Time? McCaw. He ends up getting a championship ring now.
And he played in the fourth quarter.
Played in the fourth quarter. Got a chance.
Brilliant draft.
And this is what I found fascinating with last night's game. Guys like JaVale McGee and Ian Clark. JaVale McGee and Ian Clark didn't play a minute in game five. They had played much of the final series. And Kerr said after the game, he told those guys, there's a chance I may not play you tonight because of the way this game may go and the way I see it. Don't be disappointed. I'm going with a different rotation tonight, and I'm going to try to make sure we get this this win and wrap things up. And he got those contributions from Andre Iguodala. Had 20 points last night, and that was his best game of the series, and he looked like the Andre Iguodala from 2 years ago when he won MVP in the finals and was very confident in taking those shots, knocking down some threes, and they were able to get some contributions from each and everybody throughout the series, and I think that's, compared to Cleveland, that was the thing that put them over the top, because Cleveland got great shooting from J.R. Smith last night, and it was missing. And Tristan Thompson even had his best game last night. And
but they were so inconsistent.
Very inconsistent. If Cleveland could have had those performances in games 1 through 4, we could have had an interesting series.
Yeah, and I think I certainly overvalued the depth of Cleveland's bench.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got caught up in the name a little bit, and also in some of the performances that they had in the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Right.
But, you know, Channing Frye just wasn't going to be someone that you could rely on.
My God, he hardly played.
Yeah, he hardly got in later in the series. Deron Williams obviously doesn't have it anymore. J.R. Smith was very inconsistent. Like,
they neutralized Kyle Korver.
Kyle Korver couldn't get it going at all. Like, they have names that we recognize, but a lot of those, Richard Jefferson, these guys are old, unfortunately, and as the playoffs wore on, and certainly the Warriors being as talented defensively as they are, those guys just were totally insignificant in this series. Well, they weren't a positive help, that's for sure. They were significant in that they had no depth, and that LeBron had to play 48 minutes a night, otherwise they would lose. That's a really, really hard way to go, and that showed up throughout the series.
Well, they showed how it was a microcosm of the Eastern Conference in itself, because it also showed how they were able to dominate the East, but yet when they needed it most, they couldn't get it from those guys. And unfortunately, they've got some interesting decisions to make this offseason, first starting with the general manager, David Griffin, as to whether or not they give him a new contract. They better. I mean, I don't understand why they wouldn't, but he certainly is probably going to command a few more dollars, and I'm sure he wants to stay there. I know David well, but it's time for Cleveland to do the right thing by him as well. But they've got to improve that bench, because what you don't want to do is to give LeBron James any thoughts on moving on from that franchise again, because he has the player option on his contract. And so we don't need a decision part two where he takes his basketball and go elsewhere. And
I think the city of Cleveland might just end. It wouldn't exist anymore. If LeBron left again and had the decision again.
Well, the Browns might like that.
Yeah, it would just be over with. We would no longer talk about that as a city in the United States, unfortunately. We'll get to LeBron in the third quarter. Let's get to the second quarter here and talk about the MVP of the NBA Finals, the guy who's getting probably the most flack on social media today, the guy who's been the subject of most conversations along with LeBron James, Kevin Durant. He makes the decision to leave Oklahoma City last season and head to Golden State. Clearly, just an incredible performance from him in these NBA Finals. 30 points in every single game. Mm-hmm. 39 points last night on 20 shots.
Yeah, just efficient.
Beautiful basketball from Kevin Durant, and he wins the MVP award. How are you feeling about Kevin Durant and his decision at this point today as we sit here?
The same way I felt when he made the decision. I was happy for him. I didn't, and maybe when I think back on it, I was very critical of LeBron for doing this, because he was the first prominent player to pretty much do something like that. And maybe the TV show also added to a little bit of my disgust with him. And when they got to Miami, they had the big pre-parade with a one.
Right. There's a lot of extra stuff with certainly the LeBron situation,
and so I
that
think,
people choose to forget now
reason. Totally forget. And they also have revisionist history as to what, and LeBron too even has some revisionist history. He doesn't consider that team to be a super team.
Okay.
I was a member of the Hawks at the time, and they were every bit of a super team, and that's what everybody around the league thought. But back to Durant, I was very happy for him last night, and like I said, just the mere joy you saw on his face and the exhilaration he showed after wrapping the title up. The one thing I was surprised, though, he didn't keep the basketball. If you remember, he dribbles out the clock, and he just kind of lets the ball roll off to the side.
Huh.
And so I don't know who got it, because I know the first year, I believe Andre Iguodala got it. And I think Steph Curry wanted it after year one, but he didn't get it. I don't know who got it for the Cavs in year two. But that's one of those prized possessions, in addition to the trophy, that you'd like to have. Now, everybody will get a replica trophy of some sorts that they can put on their mantelpiece and what have you. He also has the MVP trophy, but I was surprised he didn't keep the basketball.
Well, maybe the guy that broke into the Super Bowl and stole Tom Brady's jersey was there on the court, and he's got the basketball as well.
I think the NBA might have done a better job of making sure that there weren't any jersey thefts last night. but he was certainly, I thought he had an excellent five-game playoff series. He had an excellent playoff series throughout. And while I wouldn't have been disappointed if Steph Curry and he shared co-MVP awards, because I thought Steph had an outstanding series as well, Durant was the reason they won. And clear, without question, that he played the best basketball of his, 10 years now into the league?
Who, Durant?
Durant.
Yeah, 10 years.
Yeah, sorry to bring up that bad.
Oh, wait.
I know that's the Seattle.
It's okay.
But
I was just happy to see that he won it not there.
And I think it makes his career a little bit easier moving forward. He's still going to have the critics who want to criticize him and call him cupcake and everything else. And
I want to talk about those critics.
Yeah, and I had a bit of a discussion with somebody at a local establishment last night in Kennesaw about that same fact. The guy could not understand and would not let it go, even after the game, about he felt that he joined them and it wasn't fair, or he shortchanged everybody. And I was like, look, it doesn't matter, because in 10 years, who's going to care? He's going to have the championship ring. It's not going to matter. And we may see multiple other players do something similar over that period of time. So And he was like, well, he should have gone to the Spurs. And I said, well, that's not a really good comparison. I said, they're a team that won over 60 games as well, and they still have just as much talent
as the Warriors. They've been in the playoffs for 20 straight
years. Exactly. So I don't know. I wouldn't say I just gave up on the argument with the gentleman last night.
You should have walked
away
at that moment.
It was a peaceful one, thankfully. but it was obviously he was still burnt up about KD making that move. But just the joy you saw from him and his mother as she embraced him on the court. He doesn't have to answer to anybody. It's that simple. And so if you still don't like the decision he made, if you're still ticked off that he didn't remain in Oklahoma City or go to another team, hey, at the end of the day, he's comfortable in his skin, and he's happy that he won a championship, and there's nothing you can do about it.
It's just really interesting to me that, like, that guy, mm-hmm. that critic, and most other critics, I think all the critics of Kevin Durant, would be the exact same people and are the exact same people that knock on Charles Barkley for never winning a championship, knock on Karl Malone for never winning a championship.
Dominique Wilkins.
They would have said the same thing about Kevin Durant had he stayed in Oklahoma City and just kept beating his head against the wall mm-hmm. trying to play with Russell Westbrook mm-hmm. or gone someplace else and not had success either. Like, you can't have it both ways.
Right.
Like, you can't continuously tell someone who's a great player that their career is not valuable or not valued in the same way as a champion and then also get mad at him when he makes a decision to try to become a champion.
Mm-hmm.
Because he heard all that chatter. Like, guys are doing this, and I think we agree on this. LeBron made his decision. Durant made his decision. The Celtics came together for this same reason, because guys heard that narrative surrounding Charles Barkley and these other greats that they weren't the same. They weren't thought of in the same conversation as the Jordans and whoever else, the Magic Johnsons, because they have rings. Like, those same critics, that same guy at that mm-hmm. spot in Kennesaw, is the reason that Kevin Durant did what he did, and now he wants to knock on him for doing what he did. It's like that you can't win at this point. We've changed the qualifications for what greatness is in the NBA so many times over the last 15 years. Like, nobody's going to be Michael Jordan again. Like, people just have to live with that and move on. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there might be somebody better than him someday, mm-hmm. but he's not going to be the same as him. And I just, it drives me nuts to listen to these people rag on these professional athletes who, I mean, made the same damn decision that any of us would make if we were in a similar situation professionally, for doing what they did. And it worked, by the way, also.
Well, it's the nature of free agency. NFL players would love this liberty that baseball players, basketball players, and hockey players have. Free agency allows them the ability to go and play for whichever team they choose whenever they like to at the end of their contract. The NFL, you're restricted for the most part, because if you do leave as an unrestricted free agent, it costs your team 2 first-round picks. It's not a free system. And so for an NBA player, it is very easy for those guys to pick up and leave at any time. I don't necessarily like it all the time. I'm not going. And if I was still working for the Hawks, or back in the day when I was following the Lakers, if Magic Johnson had ever left the Lakers, oh yeah, it would have crushed me. But once again, that's why free agency was created. Blame Curt Flood, because it started with baseball many, many years ago. If you don't know about Curt Flood, look him up. But it allows those guys to change uniforms. Reggie Jackson went from the Oakland A's to the New York Yankees. And the rest, as they say, is history. And you shouldn't – I can understand a little bit of the disgust when it does happen, but for it to continue 6 and 7 months down the line and to still have that kind of venom towards KD, it's like, man, come on, let it go. The season is over. He's won a championship. He accomplished the goal that everyone within that league sets out to do from the start of training camp. And if you want to continue to be that bitter towards him, then fine. Have at it.
And I know it's hard oftentimes to draw parallels between professional sports and our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the standard for professional sports is just different. The money is different. The decisions are different. The amount of time they have to capitalize on their earning potential and their ability to win is different. It's all very different. But just say, for instance, that no matter what age you are in your career, you're still in your earning prime,
mm-hmm.
and you live in a city that's an okay city, and you have coworkers that are okay coworkers, but you get an opportunity to go work at the best business in a substantially better city with obviously better coworkers, and you're going to make the same amount of money, everyone would make that decision.
Oh, no doubt.
He chose to move to the Bay Area instead of live in Oklahoma City. Come on. Everyone would make that choice. Like,
and let's face it, not to bring up a bad subject with you, but he started his career in Seattle.
Yeah.
So the owner of that franchise decided at the time decided to move the team to Oklahoma City. Okay.
Kevin Durant didn't have any choice as
to
what to do.
Any choice in the matter. Seattle fans didn't have any choice in the matter. They got their hearts broken by that situation. And as much as we hated to see that happen and other teams moving from here and there, the Raiders in this case, as recently in the NFL, it's a free system that allows these owners, that allows the players to do that. And I'm a fan just as much as anybody else. And I know how it hurts when your favorite player leaves your respective team. But I'm of age now that it's I won't say I'm numb to it, but I've grown to accept it. And like I said earlier, once LeBron did this, as shocking as it was, and that wasn't even my team, but I could feel for the Cavalier workers who were with that team at that time because a lot of them were friends of mine. And I knew how much it hurt them and how it was going to bother that franchise moving forward. But because free agency is the way it is, he had every right. He didn't break any laws. All he did was entertain contract offers from Miami and other teams as well as Cleveland, and he chose to make that decision to join the Heat.
How obvious is it that this is partially about me despising the Oklahoma City Thunder?
Like,
is that showing through?
Okay. Very much so.
Yeah, that's obvious.
I don't blame you.
Well, there it is. There is just something so petty and satisfying about him leaving that team and that organization, and Clay Bennett specifically. And the first year that he leaves, he wins an NBA championship.
Well, and I hope, speaking of petty, because we heard in games after game one that Russell Westbrook was watching Sister Act 2.
Good movie.
and we didn't really hear what he was doing in the successive games, but hopefully I would like to think that he took a chance to gander at the TV for game five to see exactly how things panned out. And hopefully this summer those two can maybe squash this if there's still any ill feelings between the two, because we saw a bit of a thawing out of that in the All-Star game when KD threw the alley-oop pass to him. No, it was an All-Star game. It was an exhibition game for the most part. But the way the West team reacted, it was like they were happy amongst themselves to see this take place. So maybe with time, those two will become friends again. And I know the mothers are extremely tight. And maybe they can be the ones to help bridge this. But life's too short for people to carry those kind of hateful emotions for a period of time. When it, once again, it's Kevin Durant's life. You don't have to love it, but you have to accept it.
I hope Russell Westbrook leaves Oklahoma City too. I know you just said life is too short to carry hateful emotions, and I try to be a happy guy. That's the one thing that I refuse to let go of, and I never, ever will.
Send your tweets to Mr. Andy Bunker.
Yeah, Mr. Andy Bunker. I hope he leaves Oklahoma City too, and they're stuck with Victor Oladipo and Steven Adams forever. And then we'll see how great those fans are.
Well, they're
so
Bennett?
Great. They sell out the arena every night.
It's That's to you, Clay Bennett.
Nothing else happened in that damn city. All right. Let's get to the third quarter. And LeBron James, the other greatest player in this series, averaged a triple-double. What, he had 41 points in a triple-double in Game 5. Like you said, I think you made a really good point about the fact that in 10 years from now, people won't be as concerned with the decision that Kevin Durant made to leave Oklahoma City to get his ring. Mm-hmm. They'll just remember that he got his ring. I hope that that isn't true for what LeBron did in this series, though, in that 10 years from now, people won't remember what LeBron did in these five games.
Yeah.
They'll just remember that the Cavs lost, because LeBron was phenomenal in these, maybe the best we've ever seen him be
possibly
in these five games. Yeah. It averaged a triple-double for the finals. Like, people are going to knock on him because they didn't win, but that was an incredible performance from LeBron James.
No, I totally agree with you. I think as the summer months progress, the one game that's going to haunt him is Game 3, when he decided to make the corner pass to Kyle Korver and Kyle wasn't able to knock down that three ball. And because that was the one play where he really had everything going for him and had the decision that could have changed the outcome of the NBA Finals, because he was being, if fans remember, he was being guarded by Draymond Green, who was already in foul trouble, had five fouls at that particular point in time. We're coming down the stretch of game three, and it was a tight one, and he decides, instead of driving to the basket and taking Draymond with the potential of drawing a sixth personal foul or getting a three-point play out of it, he decides to pass it to the corner. Now, LeBron has said on many occasions since then, I'd do the same thing once again.
It was the right play.
And while it was the right play, I can understand the other side, though, because he is your key player. And while he was only maybe, 3 feet away from the basket, and as we saw in game five, he didn't care who was in front of him. It was bully ball in full effect, certainly in the second half. And he was dunking on everybody or making layups right over certain individuals. And so I think that game is going to bother him much of the summer. But over the long haul, he will certainly get over it because he's played in seven straight NBA finals. He happened to make that eight NBA finals. And so he happened to win three of them. But I'm sure this rest will be refreshing to him because he's not doing any USA basketball events this summer as well. But they've got to figure out some ways to improve that roster because you cannot go through seasons, any more of these seasons as he's now over the age of 30, of him playing 43, 45 minutes a night. It's going to take its toll because of the fact he's been in multiple finals and multiple playoff series. So Cleveland has got to figure out a lot of things over this summer as to some of those guys you mentioned earlier, the Channing Frye's of the world, Kyle Korver, Richard Jefferson, Iman Shumpert. Are those guys still valuable? J.R. Smith, are they still valuable to have on your roster? And if they're not starters, then are they capable of coming off the bench and still fulfilling those roles, much like the Warriors reserves did?
Now I want to get to the Cavs offseason and what they need to do to try to get up to the same level as the Warriors or above the level of the Warriors in a minute. Mm-hmm. But I think the point that you just made there to start the LeBron conversation is a perfect example of just how closely we analyze him, how clearly great he is, and how obviously, and it's crazy because we say this constantly with his teams, except for those Heat teams when he had really solid backup, that there's just really never been a good enough cast around him at times to supplement what it is that he's doing. Like LeBron James just played one of the greatest five-game stretches of basketball that we've ever seen, made 300 great plays in this series, but and rightfully so, we're talking about the one play where he decided not to be selfish, passed to one of the great three-point shooters in NBA history in the corner who was open, and like we agree, was a smart play, but wasn't selfish enough for some folks and wasn't take the game over enough for some folks, and that's the line between this series still going on and who knows, maybe them being able to steal game six at home and send it to seven or the Warriors taking it in five. Like that's how much LeBron James had to do for this team.
Oh, no doubt. Because if you go back to the years and when he played for the Heat, he didn't have to do this much. He had Dwayne Wade. He had Chris Bosh. He had in later years, Ray Allen to join them. Mario Chalmers was able to contribute consistently. Shane Battier, as a starter and also coming off the bench. So it wasn't the Cleveland, even though they were able to win a title last year, they were still down 3-1. I thought it was, and maybe I'm not going to give Cleveland a whole lot of credit here, because I thought Golden State lost that series more than Cleveland won it. And what I mean by that is Draymond Green, as we know, was suspended for game five, and they probably would have wrapped it up in game five a year ago. But once Cleveland won game five, they certainly seized the opportunity, but Golden State certainly blew it as well. Whereas when he was in Miami, you knew there was only one year in which outside of the first year they went to the finals and lost to Dallas, when I had an opinion that or the belief that they should lose a final series, and that was the first time they went up against the Spurs. Because I thought the Spurs literally blew it in game six when they didn't. Well, Tim Duncan sitting on the bench. And
Ray Allen makes one of the most miraculous shots we've ever seen
of all time. And because
former Sonic too, by the way.
That's right. And because their failure to get an offensive rebound on two successive possessions cost them that title. Now, they came back and won it the next year. But he had a much better cast in Miami than he's ever had in Cleveland. And while I applaud him for going to Cleveland and the video that came out over the weekend that was shot during All-Star Game in New Orleans within the barbershop. And he and Draymond Green and 2 Chainz and a few other guys were in the barbershop, and how he talked about what it meant to him to go back to Cleveland. I certainly admire him for doing that, because he didn't have to. We all know about the letter, the Comic Sans letter written by Dan Gilbert.
I love that you bring up the Comic Sans.
I always
want to bring that up too, but I don't know if people will know what I'm talking about. It makes me so happy that you brought that up.
It was so childish, because the night after the decision rolls down the pipe and you see the comments coming from the Cavs and it appears on their website, and you're like, what the hell is this? And it was like, who approved this?
So drunk.
And then their PR person, I'm very good friends with her to this day. She's not with the Cavs anymore. We had lunch this past Saturday right before I left town. And last year, or 2008.
Which one?
2008. When he left Cleveland to go to Miami.
Oh yeah, I guess that was 2009.
We talked about that, and I said, did anybody try to stop him from doing this? And I know we're talking about LeBron James, but we'll step aside here and talk about the departure from Cleveland to Miami. She told me yes. We tried to convince him all day long. So this was already pre-planned by him.
Tried to convince who?
Dan Gilbert.
They tried to convince Dan Gilbert not to
publish
the letter. Got it.
He was going to do whatever. An owner's going to do whatever he or she wants to do. But you can also talk to them about the ramifications of something like this once you put it out there for the world to see. Writing it amongst yourselves and talking about it as an organization is one thing, but now you're putting it out there for the masses, and so now you got to take all the heat and the praise that, if there was any, that comes along with it. LeBron could have hated this man, and the relationship probably isn't the best.
I think he does. And his mom certainly does.
Certainly does
and
not.
And his wife, too.
And for him to rise above that, and I know it's just a letter, but it's the principle of the thing. He's not a piece of meat. You don't own him. And that's what fans sometimes have to realize in the decision that Kevin Durant made. You don't own him. He has the ability, just like any one of us, as you said earlier, if an opportunity is presented to you that you feel is a better one. We understand these guys make astronomical dollars that many of us may never see. Still have my fingers crossed that I'll hit the lottery one of these days.
I think this podcast is going to hit it pretty big.
Yeah, we're due. I mean, this is our 10th episode.
10th
we're
episode.
10 in, so
yeah.
It's only a matter of time.
The millions are going to start rolling in shortly.
But I was very appreciative of hearing his comments and how he reacted to that, because we really wanted to know. We had never heard from him. From the moment that letter was written and the time he decided to go back to Cleveland and wrote that heartfelt letter about returning, why didn't he lash out at Dan Gilbert? He took the high road. His owner didn't take the high road. And so I can certainly, while I wasn't rooting for the Cavs to win, have a great deal of appreciation to what he's brought to the table, what he's brought to that city, what he's brought to that region, what he's brought to that state. And if he happens to depart once again, as we've heard rumors over the past week or two, that the Los Angeles Lakers could be a possibility, the LA Clippers could be a possibility, or that they could try to get players like Carmelo Anthony to come and join him in Cleveland, or Chris Paul going to Cleveland. Those scenarios, we're going to have to wait to see if they indeed play out. I don't know if some of those scenarios will indeed make them a better team. Certainly the Carmelo Anthony thing, I'm not really keen on that. But LeBron James is very deserving of all the accolades that come his way. He is certainly inching up my top 5 list. He was probably in my top 10 going into this season. And because once again, for those of you who listen to this podcast, you got to remember, I've spent my entire life, for the most part, around this NBA game, working in it for over 20 some odd years, watching it since I was probably the age of 10. So don't hate me for not having him maybe within my 1 or 2, 3 players.
His career's not over.
Ever. And that's another point.
That's what I always
say. That's another point.
We were having this discussion over the weekend, me and Stan Norfleet, I think last Friday night. And he sort of kept pushing me on legacy and all this. And I was like, I'm sorry if this is like breaking the rules of sports radio in 2017, but I'm not going to commit to that when he's 32. Mm-hmm. He's gone to 7 straight finals at this point. Who knows? Maybe he'll go to 10.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll go to 12. I don't know what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. But he's 32 years old. Like, I'm not going to commit firmly to what he is and will always be in the history of basketball, which is – decades and decades and decades of years old.
Yeah.
I can't do that yet. Like, I think it's okay to say, here's what I think he is now. I'll reassess when he's done. Every major milestone he hits, I think maybe you can inch him up the list a little bit further. But yeah, I know it's everything has to be definite these days. Well, but I don't know that it actually has to. It's okay if you leave it up for history to tell the story.
Oh, no doubt. And as we've talked before, the NBA brings out more passionate fans than I think any other sport. The NFL brings out a lot more passionate fans towards their teams than individuals.
And players, yes.
Whereas the NBA, for whatever reason, has been able to seize upon that and take advantage of it, certainly through social media and what have you, and the fact that they do glorify the athlete over the team, maybe to a detriment to some degree, but it is how they operate nowadays. And I'm fully behind the NBA's approach. I love the league to death. But
it's working.
Yeah, it certainly. I mean, the TV ratings are through the roof, as we said earlier, with these finals. I think the highest since the Bulls in 1998, if I'm not mistaken.
98?
And so the interest is definitely there. The dollars are rolling in from the networks and local and cable networks, as well as the national TV partners. So the NBA is going to ride this crest. I'm not willing to say they're ready to bring back the America's Game motif or the NBA is fantastic. But hey, it's a good time for them right now.
The more, and this is a conversation maybe for later in the summer, but the more football has to deal with head injuries and decreasing numbers of players at a youth level. I think it's a good time for the NBA. Yeah. I think the NBA is in a really good spot. 23 years with the Hawks, obviously, right?
Right.
Press releases after official stat. If you had to somehow try to come close to estimating how many official press releases and statements you put out when you were with the Hawks, just a ballpark number.
Wow. I would say, because not every release is a long release.
Sure.
You could do one on the release of a player or trade.
That's okay. Those count.
Acquisition. Man, maybe 3,000?
How many of those 3,000 were written in Comic Sans?
Oh, that's funny.
Probably none.
Probably none. I tell you one of my funniest press releases. It involved the night we traded Sharif Abdul-Rahim for Rashid Wallace, Jimmy Jackson, and a pick might have been involved.
That's right. The one day Rashid Wallace was an Atlanta Hawk.
Rashid Wallace. No, it wasn't Rashid. It was just straight up. I'm sorry. Jimmy Jackson and Isaiah Ryder came for Steve Smith. The Rashid Wallace deal was for Sharif Abdul-Rahim, and I believe a pick, one with going from one team or coming back from the other team, was involved. But I closed the release out after having comments from our general manager, Billy Knight, and listing the player stats like we always do and trying to pump it up as much as possible. I closed the release by saying, because it happened after a game, so this is after midnight that we're working on this thing and getting it out. And while it had already been announced, you still have to do a release to form it out to your website and to the AP and local news media. I closed it by using Rashid's famous saying, God bless and good night. And I did it partly as a joke to see if anybody was paying attention that late at night.
I couldn't wait to hear which Rashid phrase you were going to use.
God bless and good night. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's plenty. I had to keep it clean.
Both teams played hard.
And so guys had a big laugh out of that, and they were like letting me know the next morning, well, at least you kind of made it interesting and amusing at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. For us. And I was like, hey, what can you do? I mean, it's a part of the job. You knew it was a 24/7 gig. Probably my most disappointing release to ever have to write was when we traded Dominique Wilkins, because we had heard the rumors that something could happen. You were hoping that it wouldn't come to fruition, but it was very discouraging to finally have to do that and then have to go out to his house, not to tell him that he had been traded, because once again, these were the days before cell phones and what have you, and Dominique wasn't answering his home phone. And so he knew what was happening, but he just didn't answer the phone that day. And so...
So wait a minute. You're the person that told Dominique Wilkins?
I think they Stan Kasten and Pete Babcock were our... Stan was our team president. Babcock was our general manager. I think they got through to his agent and somehow the agent got through to him. So the word got to him, but I don't think it officially came from a member of the Hawks,
until
I showed up at his house. And that was tough. And then the only reason I had to go to his house was obviously because the media was looking to get in touch with him. And so I tried to convince him, like, you need to talk to these people, because what you don't want to do is leave here on a bad note. You had a stellar career and a very good relationship with members of the media. So you don't want to blow them off because you're upset about being traded, because you played the game with class, you represented the organization with class, and it's you need to go out the same way. And the second toughest release that I've ever had to write was that Steve Smith one, because I told Pete Babcock at the time, and I'll never forget this quote as long as I live. I said, "Man, you are trading character for a character," and that's exactly what we were doing. And that particular year, we should have kept that nucleus of the team, because it was
Michael Jordan. They traded Steve Smith for
Jimmy Jackson and J.R. Ryder.
For J.R. Ryder.
And J.R. was a free agent going into his free agent year. And if we had kept that nucleus together, we traded pretty much everybody off of that team. Dikembe was the only player who remained. Christian Laettner left. Steve Smith left. Mookie Blaylock was traded to Golden State. If we had brought that team back, we would have probably been the favorites in the Eastern Conference that next year, because Jordan had retired. And so we were the most veteran outfit coming back that next year. But because there was a lot of pressure from the media that we need to break this team up. There was a lot of internal pressure going on within the organization. And so we end up blowing it up to the point of where we ended up in a 9-year tailspin of never making the playoffs. And so that's why I'm always apprehensive about teams and fans wanting to, in basketball that is, to say blow it up.
Yeah.
Because you don't know Philadelphia, the 76ers have been trusting the process for a long time now. And they've still, maybe this is the year they finally sniffed the playoffs, but it's been a long, debilitating stretch of seasons for them. And it was as painful as anything I'd ever gone through outside of cancer.
I think it might be an interesting podcast at some point this summer when it's a little slower to devote an entire four quarters to the day that Dominique Wilkins got traded by the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah.
I mean, you obviously were there in a lot of different ways. You were involved.
And when he returned back to Atlanta, and how
we're doing that. We could maybe Dominique.
Yeah, I'll definitely try to get Neek in with us and let him, because he's certainly much more mature now than he was then, and so he's talked about this subject ad nauseum, and I'm sure he would be cool with talking and discussing his feelings then and now.
Let's get to the fourth quarter and look ahead to a 30 for 30 that I know that we're all very excited about, especially you.
Oh, yes.
The Lakers and the Celtics 30 for 30. It's a two-night event, right?
Mm-hmm. Three-part series.
Three-part series. Tuesday night is the first episode. What are you, I guess, most looking forward to coming out of this 30 for 30?
I'm interested in seeing how the players on both teams, Celtics and Lakers, react now to that series and those years of seeing each other pretty much every other, if not every other year, close to darn near every year in the playoffs and in the finals. Because you had the West Coast, that was your first East Coast-West Coast rivalry. Hip-hop wasn't around then, and so you had these games being telecast on CBS, and Brent Musburger and who was his color commentator then? See, I shouldn't have done that, because now I'm drawing a blank. Tommy Heinsohn, former Celtic,
Tommy Points.
Yeah.
The most biased homer in the history of the NBA.
Definitely. And so you had to put up with him on the broadcast, and Pat O'Brien was the sideline reporter.
Okay.
And so you'll see, I've already seen that Pat O'Brien is a part of this 30 for 30, and I'm sure I would like to think they will talk to Stockton and Heinsohn as well.
We might hear our theme song.
I think we certainly will.
That's
and
great.
So it was, I grew up, as I've said before, I grew up a Lakers fan. Jerry West was my first favorite player that I've ever watched. And when Magic Johnson and Larry Bird had their showdown in the NCAA tournament that year, Michigan State, Indiana State, and they both went into the NBA draft, and you followed those guys because they gave, that was the start of the resurgence of NCAA college basketball. And also they brought the renaissance of the NBA to the league at such young ages with them. And so watching Magic's ability to penetrate the court as a 6'9 point guard in a power forward's body, and his exuberance in which he played the game, and the amount of fun he had, you couldn't tell me anything about the Lakers back then, because I would sit up and watch games in my Lakers sweatsuit like I'm about to check in, and my mom would always yell at me, "Boy, you are not playing. Why are you dressed that way, and why are you yelling at the TV?" And I was like, "Will you please leave me alone? I'm not bothering anybody. I'm not in the streets, called in trouble.
I'm just into it.
In the house.
Yeah, I'm just
fun.
Into it. I just love it."
And so it was. Those series were great. I mean, you had great talent on both sides of the floor. You had the blue-collar approach from the Celtics and their big three of Larry Bird, Robert Parrish, and Kevin McHale, and certainly no slouches with Dennis Johnson and Gerald Henderson in the backcourt. And with the Lakers, you had the Magic, James Worthy, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar trio with Byron Scott and Michael Thompson at one stretch, or Bob McAdoo at another, playing the power forward position, and Kurt Rambis with his bifocals doing a lot of the dirty work. And everything was going well for those Lakers teams. I think it was 1984. And the game that will probably be featured throughout this series is when Kurt Rambis was pulled out of the air by Kevin McHale, when the Showtime guys were just having fun and putting up a lot of points and basically running the Celtics right off the floor. And he gets clotheslined by McHale. We had never really seen that happen in a game before. And this was not typical of a Celtics team either, but it was on from that point on. It took the Lakers completely out of their element, because they had never been shook that way before. Teams had given out hard fouls, but nothing like that. And so now they had to. It was in their minds that you had to think every time you came down a lane, whether it was Magic or Scott or anybody or Worthy, that if you could possibly hit the floor. And Boston won the psych game in that regard, won that series, stole that series. Magic was known as Tragic Johnson after that series, and it's been documented that he spent the entire summer in his house because of the way that series affected him. And they came out the next year with a purpose on their minds and dismantled the Celtics the very next year. Happened to win the series on their home floor, the first time the Lakers ever did that in their history. And Magic accomplished it by hitting a baby skyhook that I'll remember to this day. And he shot it over both Parrish and McHale. And it was just fascinating to see the talent at work in that series. I mean, Larry Bird was phenomenal. Magic was his equal. There were many post-game comments in which Bird said, "He's just the best ever." And that was high praise coming from Larry, because they both had shared MVP awards over those years. And you had great coaches in Pat Riley and Casey Jones getting it done. And the fan support on both coasts were impressive. I mean, Boston's fans kept the Beat L.A. chant going. And then L.A., even though they were sunshine and beach-going people, "Boston sucks" rang from the Forum. And that was two iconic buildings as well. I mentioned the Forum,
yeah.
And you had Boston Garden. And nowadays with...
You've been in both those buildings?
Both of those buildings.
That's
and
cool.
Have great memories from both. The Garden was everything. The Boston Garden was everything I expected, because there was very little... If you played the Celtics in May, it was very warm in those buildings. And sometimes in October or November, if you ended up playing them then, if it hadn't gotten cold by then. But sometimes the portable heaters worked, sometimes they didn't. Sometimes the showers had hot water, sometimes they didn't. And the Lakers ran into a lot of that. And you had the Boston Massacre, when they just destroyed the Lakers in game one of one of those series games. And it was the story I remember most, as Pat Farrelly has told, about the film session they had the next day, and the guy sitting in the front of the room was the captain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And that very next game, he came out with a vengeance, ended up winning the series MVP that year as the Lakers cast aside the Celtics. And it was finally refreshing for me as a Laker fan to finally get rid of that demon, because prior to the Showtime era, the Celtics owned the Lakers in the days of Russell and Casey Jones as a player, Havlicek. And
they beat them every
Cousy,
single
every
year in the 60s.
I mean, the Lakers, there was one year where they had home court advantage, and they had the opportunity. I think they had home court advantage. If not, they had the ability to wrap it up in game six. No, it was game seven. and they had the balloons hanging from the forum sky, and that was before the game. So if you're a Celtic player, you saw this up there as you're getting ready to play that night's game, and that's even more incentive for you to beat them, and they did. One on the forum floor, and those balloons stayed up there until, I guess, a week later or whenever.
Somebody had to go clean them out,
had to
get
them down, I guess. But it was a terrific rivalry. I consider it one of the best in sports. It rivals Yankees, Red Sox. I don't know if there's an NFL series back then that comes close to rivaling that. Maybe the interdivisional or interconference rivalries like Dallas, Washington, and what have you. But I'm looking very much forward to watching this 30 for 30 because it'll bring back a lot of memories. And also, it'll cause you to think back as to what you were doing around that period of time.
Yeah. Well, what I was doing around that period of time was being born. So I'm looking forward to learning a lot about it. Like, obviously, for you, like you said, it's going to refresh memories. It's going to bring you back. It's going to... You're going to remember stuff that you had forgotten and be like, oh, yeah, I can't believe that I forgot that moment.
Things like that happened around the atmosphere of the forum, Dancing Barry.
Right.
The Laker girls. Boston didn't have that.
Right.
They only maybe the last 10 years or so did the Boston Celtics ever create a mascot or the dancing girls. And so the Lakers were in the forefront of a lot of the game entertainment type of things, and stars galore. I mean, Jack Nicholson, Diane Cannon, Lou Gossett Jr., and people like Sylvester Stallone. They were, if you were a highfalutin celebrity back in L.A., Laker tickets was the place to be.
Yeah, I'm really excited to get your opinion of what you think of it, because obviously for you, it's retelling a story that's so vital to your... Honestly, I mean, that rivalry, your love for that team led to your career. Like, you loved it so much.
It was the team I always wanted to work for.
Yeah.
That never happened, but at that point in time, I never thought I would work in the NBA as well. So to have gotten the opportunity to not only visit those buildings that you considered iconic, I fortunately got a chance to attend a finals game in LA two straight years running. They clinched in 82 against the Sixers on their home floor, and I went back the following year when I believe they lost to the Sixers. In the 4-0 sweep, but that was my first experience of watching championship basketball. And so being a kid from New Orleans, and we had I don't know by that time if the Jazz was still in town or not, but the Lakers were my thing for 6 or 7 months out of the year. And the NFL team there, the Saints, weren't even on my radar. I mean, I followed them, but it wasn't like it was my ride or die. The Lakers were. And so they better do this 30 for 30 right. We know they can.
Right. That's what I'm hoping for. I'm going to be so sad if you're disappointed in it, because it clearly it means a lot to you. Like, it's such a vital part of your fanhood.
You know, speaking on a side note, speaking of 30 for 30, one of my highlights this past weekend of being in Cleveland was meeting Ezra Edelman.
Oh, really?
Who was the director and producer of the 30 for 30 on O.J. Simpson. So we got a chance to talk a little bit, and I had forgotten he may have come through Atlanta while I was working as the PR director for the Hawks, because at the time he was working for Slam Magazine.
Oh, right.
And I didn't know that. He had to refresh my memory on that. And so it was great catching up with him. And I'm not in awe of watching NBA players anymore. I've been around it for so often. But to stand there alongside of an Oscar winner and talking to him about my joy in watching that seven-part series.
That was a great 30 for 30.
it was very nice to chat it up with him for a little bit. So the pressure's on ESPN, and I'm sure they'll do a great job, and I don't think I'll be disappointed. It's going to be how many times am I going to sit and watch it over this weekend, because unfortunately we don't have any more NBA basketball.
Yeah, it's that time of year, which means next week on the Basketball Show, we'll get Mike Conte in here and Deshaun Tate as well to help get us ready for the NBA draft. I'm actually, I don't know how I got this gig, but I'm excited about it. I'm hosting our draft coverage next Thursday live on 92.9 The Game from the College Football Hall of Fame. So we'll be down there right close to Phillips. And
yes, and you heard him right. The College Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I know. The College Football Hall of Fame for the NBA draft. But that's because they're renovating Phillips
Arena,
so we can't get in there yet. So we'll get reaction from some folks in the organization.
We'll see if the Hawks maintain that 19th pick in the first round.
Sure. And absolutely looking forward to what they're going to do a week from Thursday. But, yeah, we'll get all of that preview for you next week. Until then, all we really can do is watch the 30 for 30 and hang out.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't congratulate my good friend Zaza Pachulia. He is now an NBA champion. And I don't know if I would have ever said that while he was working and playing here with the Hawks and once he departed his career. But I was very pleased to see the excitement that he was showing in the locker room last night. And the one scene that really brought me a lot of laughter was his two kids trying to pour champagne on him. And because he's so big, they were hitting him at waist high. So so it was good. It was great that he was able to include his young boys in that scene. It's a lot of memories that he'll have for a lifetime. And I can't wait to talk to him and to get his feelings after this championship parade that goes down on Thursday. And I'm sure he'll have a lot of fun. And I know he'll come back through Atlanta and share those experiences with us. And to Zaza, congratulations, my man.
Congratulations, Zaza. Congratulations to the Warriors.
To the Warriors!
That'll do it for our 10th episode of the Basketball Show, and that's the end of the 2016-2017 NBA season. Now we're on to the draft, free agency, and see what the Hawks do next. We're going to be with you, though. We're going to stick with it throughout the entire summer and
summer
on into next
coming,
season.
Summer League will be coming up after the draft in July, so while we may not do a show each and every week, we will come to you periodically over the course of the summer when situations warrant as we evaluate what the Hawks and other NBA teams are doing. The NBA award show is also a few days after the NBA draft. So we're pretty sure as to
we get to
Russell Westbrook will win the MVP, it's not a given until he actually receives the award. But you can always follow us on Twitter at the B-Ball Show. At the B-Ball Show 929 on Twitter, and respectively, the two individuals, myself and Andy, at X Hoops PR Guy.
And you can follow me at Mr. Andy Bunker. So without any further ado,
until next time, from way downtown, bang!
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.